Okay, good evening. We got started late this evening. I had a dinner for my late Rebbe, Zatzal Rebbe Yechiel Per. So we are now into our fifth forum, and so far we have covered Hashem's breath of love, and inner circle, in fact, and pages we did last week. And all of this is in our quest for freedom. Freedom to live, to love, to serve Hashem. We're going to learn today a truly life-transforming tool. It's more than the tool. It goes to the center of self, which is why it's called centering. And in contrast to the other skills that we have learned from meditations, this does not touch our thoughts or our feelings. It touches our physical being and goes beyond that to the depths of who we are deep within. Let me give you a background of centering. So, regardless of our wishes to be free of the war that we wage for our life in this world, Olam Hazeh, and for eternity in Olam Haba, there is always that force that is, what I call that woodpecker, right? So pecking away at the brain, at the heart. And nobody is really immune. I had last week an older man, 65. I'm older than he is, but 65 is pretty old, especially if you've been struggling with this since you were 10 years old. And especially if you're a Talmud Chacham, which he was. And he has raised his family successfully, but he has struggled with this tormenting addiction, if we call it that, or illness, since he was 10, 11 years old. And he has been through much treatment, and nothing has ever touched him. It all began when he was a young boy of about in Cheder. And someone touched him, and he has never forgotten that. And he's been struggling with it since. And you would never know if he would speak to him, Mamash Yerushimayim. But the power of this force is unforgiving and relentless. That's how the Yetzer Hara works. It creates this ever-present, ongoing desire, always under attack, always triggered by countless forces, by anxiety, by rejection, by depression, by loneliness, by boredom, by fear, the need for excitement, seeing a billboard, a passing figure, somebody saying one word, a memory, a fantasy, and suddenly everything is in front of us, like it never went away. It doesn't only go in this area, many areas of life. I want to share with you one of the first times I had used centering and understood its power. There was a young man who came to see me. He was maybe 22, 23 years old, and he was dating, and he couldn't go on dates. And he told me that up until the age of about 18, I'm sorry, probably about 14. He was doing quite well. He had friends, and he was doing well in school, a bright fellow. But then he told me something happened that had never left his mind and really changed his life. It was at the end of the year and time to graduate. I think he was going from 8th grade to 9th grade. And there was a graduation ceremony for the entire 8th grade. And everybody was announced, so Chaim is now in 8A and he's going to 9A. Now this young man, we'll call him Ellie. Ellie had a very difficult year because his grandfather lived with them, and he was very close to his grandfather. And during the course of the year, his grandfather died. A deep shock to him, and he missed a lot of school. And he never really made up for it. And in the process, came for his finals, he really didn't do very well. So when it came time to announce, Ellie is going from 8A to 9A, the principal did something he never should have done, announced that Ellie is going from 8A to 9B. He was kind of being demoted one level in his class. And at that moment, he felt that all the eyes were upon him. Felt a deep sense of embarrassment. And from that moment on, everywhere he went, he felt the eyes were upon him. So when he walked into school, Beis HaMedrash, in the morning, all eyes were upon him. When he would stand up in class, all eyes were upon him. Every situation reminded him of that. And Ellie's life changed in a very significant way. Ellie was one of the first individuals I taught centering to. And I'm going to teach you centering tonight. And it made a very, very significant difference in his life almost immediately. You see, you never know when you're going to be hit. You never know when it's going to come at you. For Ellie, it was a sense of humiliation, embarrassment. For someone who struggles with the kinds of issues we're struggling with, it's the kind of that woodpecker or that fierce lion that kind of lunges at you with an urgency that you really can't put down, creating an illusion of feeling that you can't control yourself. Can't control your mind, can't control your body. Everything is out of control. What choice do you have but to give in? It's looming so large, so powerful. And this is the experience that so many have. You know, you can be free for 6 months, maybe a year even, and suddenly it hits you from nowhere. Like a lion. Now, so we have questions that we want to ask ourselves, and we're trying to give them answers. So, how legitimate is this urge? How legitimate is this desire? And if that's the case, how can I ever really be safe? How can I walk into an airport terminal, a train, a bus, a city street filled with people, particularly in the summer? How can I even walk into a shul? How can I pass a billboard, open a paper, magazine? Even a Frum magazine, Mishpacha, Ami, anything without being triggered. Where is my neshama in all this? I have a neshama, right? On the Shamash and Asata Bitohori, we say it every morning. Hashem, you gave me back my neshama. Where is my neshama in all this? How come it's quiet? Why isn't it there to protect me? Another question, how can I feel grounded? How can I feel a sense of, an internal sense of control, of safety, connected to myself, to my deeper self? Imagine that you were floating in a protective bubble, right? You know you got to go to the airport terminal. You know that the videos are going to be blaring, right, on the plane. You know you're walking through Penn Station and the guys are drinking their beer and talking about the girls in the office. And people are walking by and they're dressed seductively. The language, the sounds, the whole cadence, you know it's going to get to you. What if you were ensconced in a protective bubble, kind of floating through untouched? No. What if you had to go through a jungle terrain? If you're riding a scooter, you're really going to be bumped around. What if you were in a Land Rover, right? A cushy Land Rover, right? You're not going to be with great shocks. Right? So you can get through that. It's manageable. It's possible. You see, the real challenge here is that the mind and the body and the feelings and the fantasies are all screaming that my urge is real, my desire is real, my inability to hold myself back is real. But the reality is that there's a deeper reality. There's a reality of neshama. The neshama knows it's all an illusion. The reality seems so great, but it really is an illusion. But we don't live in our neshamas. We live in the world around us. So how do we protect ourselves? How do we hear the sounds, voices of the neshama that enable us to withstand the shocks, the stimuli, all the countless triggers in our environment and in our minds and in our memories? How do we smooth out all the stimulation? How do we keep reality in perspective? How do we learn to know our truths? This is where centering comes in, and this is what I'm going to teach you. Centering is an act. It's not a thought. It's not a feeling. It's a sensory sensation. It's an act. It's an act that enables us to bypass thoughts, memories, feelings, and keep ourselves grounded in a deeper, truer reality of your neshama state of minds. And how do you access centering? You access centering with your hands. That's right, hands. Why hands? Well, firstly, we know that the hands are the most delicate, sensitive, and precise parts of our body. With our hands, some can perform neurosurgery. With our hands, we can become a concert pianist or violinist. With our hands, we can become a carpenter. A mother can soothe her infant baby's cheeks with her hands. We say in Tehillim, Hanashama Bekapi, my neshama in my hands. Now, what does this all mean? Is it just concepts? No. This is an experience of the body, a sensory experience, which I'm going to teach you. And once you learn centering, you're going to use it very often. And you're going to find its marvelous, marvelous advantages to enable you to create that bubble, to enable you to create that Land Rover over the jungle terrain and not to be swallowed by your runaway thoughts, fantasies, feelings, urges, and everything else that gets triggered by all the woodpeckers in your environment. So let's talk about hands. There are many people, when they are nervous and tense, you will see that they will say, "This guy drives me nuts, right? This guy makes me crazy." And you'll see that their hands will move in very tense and intense ways. You'll see fingers begin to tighten. You'll see people biting their nails and picking at their cuticles. You'll see different signs of tension. What's that all about? Well, it's a very simple phenomenon. If I am tense in my brain between somewhere between my temples, there's my brain, right? And I feel tension. So that tension is always seeking a way out. One way it seeks to express itself is through hands. And hands have a way of kind of wailing. You know, you point your finger at somebody and you say, "You S.O., whatever it is," and you kind of stick your finger in his face. Now, so hands have a way of expressing tension, but they're much more effective at expressing tension than the brain, because the brain can't talk. The brain can only use the mouth or the hands. And once it uses the hands and the fingers and they become so intense, it sends a feedback loop to the brain to become even more intense, right? And the hands and the brain get caught up in this loop. And before you know it, you're a raving lunatic, right? That's what happens all the time. Now, there are other people who use their hands in a very, very precise and meaningful way. So let's say there is a conductor of an orchestra. He's using his hands very precisely. He has a baton, and he's waving that baton along to enable to the symphony orchestra to get a sense of where he's leading them. Or we can even have somebody who is a mother is using her hands to calm her infant child. Right? We use our hands either in ways that express our anxiety or our attention, or we use our hands in a way that enable us to be creative, be gentle, be caring. So the softness of hands, because hands, your own hands touch very gently, just have your palms touch, you can feel that softness touches softness. Hands transmit through the sensory experience without words. The touch alone transmits so much. Anxiety, on the other hand, creates chaos. Menuchas HaNefesh creates the gentle touch. The gentle touches of the hands remind us of the gentleness of the neshama. And when we learn to use our hands in this very focused way, then our neshama state of mind emerges, and I'm going to demonstrate to you how that occurs. And once the neshama state of mind emerges through the gentleness of hands, the inner chaos, the urges, the fantasies, all the inner wildness of self is quieted. Now, I'll give you a couple more examples. Let's say you're a young child and you're learning to ride your bicycle. So you have your hands on the handlebars and those handlebars are going back wildly from right to left, left to right, right? And sooner or later you fall. You pick yourself up. Sooner or later you pick yourself up and you continue. Vivian, I can hear you. I probably went on mute. Viv?
Yes.
I hear you. Please put it.
Okay.
Thank you. But if you come back a few minutes later and this child is riding his bicycle, imagine seeing this child holding the handlebars with a great sense of mastery, right? And his hands aren't going back and forth wildly because he is in balance. His hands are balanced on the handlebars. Or someone who's driving a car. When you first learn to drive the car, you go back and forth on that wheel. But after a while, it seems that you're not even moving the steering wheel at all, because you had that very delicate sense of balance. So this is the secret of centering. Centering is creating an internal balance that we use to enable us to quiet the chaos within, to quiet the urges within, to quiet the memories within. Now, I'm going to have you experience a meditation on centering. Now, centering does not require a meditation when you use it. When you use it very quickly. You can use it within seconds. But the meditation is very effective in enabling you to have a deep sense of experience of what centering is all about. And once you use the meditation once or twice, you won't really need it anymore because you'll understand it very clearly. You're not learning anything new. You're touching something that's always been there within you. You're touching a treasure that's always been buried within you throughout your life. So with that, we're going to do a centering meditation. Now, what I'd like you to do, firstly, I'd like you to have your hands touch. Now, your hands can touch any way you wish. You can have your fingertips touch. You can have your palms touch. You can have one hand cupped beneath the next, right? You can have one hand on top of the other. Just as long as both hands touch. The reason why both hands have to touch is because when they touch, they speak to each other. For example, if you were to touch your nose, right, or your ears, that your finger or your hand is touching your nose, but your nose is not touching your finger, right? The nose can be touched, but it does not touch. It does not have the ability to touch, right? I'm sure you can snuggle up to something and touch it with your nose, but that's not what we use our nose for. We use our nose to breathe. So the hands, the fingers, can touch. The nose is touched, but it itself does not touch. And when two hands are touching, they speak to each other. They speak the language of balance. They speak the language of softness, right? Gentleness. So with that concept in mind, we're now going to do a sentry meditation. So I would like you to have your hands touch. Some people enjoy placing their hands on their lap. Some people kind of lean back and have their hands one on top of the other, maybe placing your hands on your abdomen. And some just kind of floating somewhere in the air and having your fingers touch your finger pads, any way you wish. And with that, once you get comfortable, we're going to begin. So I'd like you to have your hands or your fingers touch ever so gently and close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, feel the gentleness of the touch. Feel how your hands speak to each other in a very gentle way. And when you feel the softness of your hands and the delicateness of their touch, you can be aware that within you there is a gentle and soft neshama. The softness of the neshama, the gentleness of your neshama within you, is evoked by the awareness of the gentleness of your hands. And I'd like you to imagine, as your hands are touching ever so softly, that you are walking in a meadow, and you can feel the soft summer grass beneath your feet, and you can feel the warmth of the summer air and the sun shining above you as it sits in a clear blue summer sky. And you can see elegant, pure white birds hovering ever so gracefully around you. And you can smell the aroma of the blossoms and see the breeze moving the branches of the tall trees so elegantly. And you come across a pond, and the pond is shimmering in the summer sun, and its waters are so pure. And you bend down, and you feel the warmth of the waters, and they're so inviting. And you enter into the waters, and you're immersed, ensconced, surrounded by the warm waters, almost as if you're a child in its mother's loving embrace. And I'd like you to imagine that you emerge to the surface of the waters. And as you emerge, you're floating. And you're floating in the waters. And so your face is to the warmth of the sun. And your back is to the warmth of the waters. And as you float between the warmth of the waters and the warmth of the sun, you realize that there is a gentle neshama floating within you. It fills your entire being, yet touches nothing. It's a part of you, but emerges from eternity. It lives forever. And as your hands are touching, ever so gently, you realize that the touching of your hands reminds you of the gentle neshama within you. At every moment of your life, the source of your life is your neshama. And merely by touching your hands so gently, you become aware of the source of your life, the neshama that Hashem sends from eternity that fills your entire being. It's a calming, reassuring, comforting feeling. And I'd like you to imagine, as you're lying on the waters, your hands touching, aware of your neshama, that you can be in many situations with your hands touching, perhaps your hands placed on your abdomen, perhaps you're walking through an airport terminal, but you're centered. Perhaps you're walking into a crowd of people that would normally cause you to have many unwanted thoughts, but you're centered. Perhaps you see an old friend or someone who you really do not want to see again, but you're centered. Wherever you may be, once you're centered, you're grounded in the reality of your true self, of your neshama state of mind, of your neshama self. It quiets the chaos. It quiets the fantasies. It quiets the runaway thoughts. Perhaps you're walking into your house, whether you're married or you live with others, your family, and normally you would have an urge to say or do something which is going to be unwanted by both by you and those who you are living with. But if you walk in and you're centered, you feel a deeper sense of inner control, of inner balance. It's a remarkable feeling of mastery, the experience of being centered. So I'd like you now to open your eyes. Keep your hands once again touching. And be aware of the power of centering. Now, centering is something you can even use around the phone. Certainly, if you have an earpiece, you can be centered while you're talking. You can also use centering when you're walking into a room. I would give you an important concept of centering, which will be very helpful. If you know that you're walking into a challenging situation, you know that you're going to be stimulated in the way you did not want to be, or triggered in the way you did not want to be triggered. Remember, just doesn't have necessarily have to be related to the challenge. It could also be related to anxiety, to a fear. If you walk into the environment centered, you will find yourself much more buffered, much more protected, insulated. If you do not walk in centered, you'll be a bit overwhelmed. You'll be able to get centered, take back control, but it won't be as effective as had you walked in centered to begin with. It's a very important concept with centering. How often are you centering? Well, someone once said to me, you know, I was watching you give a speech, and you assented half the time. And I said, well, that means you weren't watching me the other half, right? Was I aware that I was assented? No, I was not. Sometimes I can be aware. When I want to say something to someone which I think is very powerful, then I will always get centered, so I'll make sure that what I say is said in a gentle way, in a calm way, in a thoughtful way, so it can be heard and not hurt that person. Right. Centering is a very effective way of communicating as well. So you can use centering if you're a teacher. You can use centering if you're a husband or a wife or a parent. You can use it in your office, whether you're a lawyer or an accountant. You can use it when you walk into shul, when you walk into a wedding and you have all kinds of feelings. You can be wherever you may be. And you will always find it to be an extremely effective way of communicating on a sensory level with yourself, with your deeper self, with your neshama self. It makes an incredible difference. And you can start whenever you're ready. Once you learn how to use it, you'll find that you'll never want to be without it. And 90% of the time, you won't even be aware that you're using it. So with that, I'm going to open up the discussion for you to ask questions about centering. So I'm going to anybody would like to ask any questions or through the chat, we will have a small enough group we can unmute. Do we have any questions or any responses?
You're on the phone and you'd like to ask the question.
Yes.
Raise your hand and I will unmute you.
Excuse me?
If you're on the phone and you would like to ask a question, you can raise your hand and I will unmute.
Yeah.
Putting your hands together as opposed to actually concentrating after touching your hands together on the softness.
No, it's not a concentration, it's a feeling. It's a sensation. It doesn't involve thinking. If I tell you, if you're holding a baby in your arms and you want to touch that baby's cheek, you don't have to say, I'm going to touch the cheek softly. You know instinctively, without thinking, that you're going to touch that cheek softly. So we're bypassing thought. We're going directly to the sensation of softness. Does that make sense?
Sure. We have another question, is how do we know if we are being real or it's just a myitis?
Well, I would tell you this. The sensation of your hands touching is more real than anything going through your brain, right? In other words, on a level of what is really happening at this moment, what's cooking up in your brain will be all kinds of urges and memories and and stimulations and all kinds of things. None of them are real because they're not really happening. Right? The feeling of the sensation of centering is grounded in the reality of your hands touching, which is more real than anything going on in your brain. Now, if you're walking across a railroad track and the train is coming towards you, well, that's pretty real. But that's not happening in your brain, that's happening in the world outside of you. Right? So you will find where this young man who I mentioned before found when I taught him centering, the one who had this trauma in class by the graduation, he experienced his ability to walk into the yeshiva, into the base medrash, for the first time in years without feeling that all eyes were upon him. So that means that when he would walk in during those years when he had this trauma on his mind, that he was creating these fantasies, right? Because all it took was centering for him to quiet them down. So we look at reality from a phenomenological perspective. The phenomenon of touch is much more real than the phenomenon of your runaway thoughts. And that's what makes centering so powerful. Because it is grounding you in reality.
Question from caller ending in 0793.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we be concentrating
on using noise? I'm not. It's not very loud, so if you could speak a little bit louder, please.
Should we be concentrating on something when putting our hands together?
No. No, we don't concentrate. What you want, because the moment you concentrate, you're not experiencing the sensation of the hands. Right? What you're concentrating on is kind of just the reassuring gentleness of the hands. Right? It's not that it doesn't require thought. It's that thought kills the centering experience. In the same way that that aroma bypasses the spinal cord and goes right to the brain, centering also bypasses thought and cognition and goes right to the brain. It is a sensation, right? If you're getting, somebody's giving someone else a massage, right? You may say that feels good, but it's not saying that making it happen. It's the actual feeling that's making it happen. You're just commenting on it. You understand?
Yeah, thank you.
We have another question here in the chat. How does centering help when you're in a state of an urge or even anxiety, when they are real threats? Does your neshama state of mind push off these external factors?
Well, as I said before, once you're in the state of urge, centering works best when you're anticipating. Centering works in a social situation, right? It's not between you and yourself. It's not between you and a video screen. It's not between you and someone else who is once the process has begun. Centering works best before you begin, when you want to protect yourself before you go into the situation. And once the urge is there, centering is not. I'll be teaching you other skills to handle that. Centering is effective as a preventive technique, knowing you're walking into, when you're walking into an airport terminal, right? And you're walking past the bars, right? And you're walking past the video screens, and you're walking past the people all, all decked out to stimulate and to seduce, and to draw your attention. And you know you're going in there, that's when centering works best. When you're walking into an environment that you know, we're walking into a workplace, and you know you're going to see somebody in that workplace, that kind of touches things off. You don't want to happen. Centering will work, will be marvelous for that. Once the urge is there, centering will not help. That's a whole other process which we'll get into. It'll work for damage control. But you won't be free. You'll be struggling. Am I clear on that?
Don't have a response in the chat on that.
Let's see.
Yes.
Good. Good. Thank you. By the way, most of your questions about centering will be answered when you begin to use it. I would recommend listening to the recording one more time and doing the meditation one more time. You won't be needing it after that, but once that happens, once you do that, you'll be in a much better place, and you can start to use it immediately with a parent, with a sibling, with a friend, with a whoever, and you'll see the difference that it makes. It creates a nanosecond of separation between the patterned habitual reaction, right? It gives you a nanosecond of bechira, of free will. That's what centering does. It slows down reality. So you have the ability to make choices. You have the ability, the sense of freedom in the gentleness of the hands. Any other questions?
There's a question. Are we able to get the recording Monday or Tuesday so we can review?
I hope. I think last week we got it on Monday. And certainly we'll have it by Tuesday. I think our friend at GY Chaim has been wonderful in getting these recordings up. All four recordings are up so far. And I think this should be up by tomorrow. Hopefully, or latest by Tuesday.
The chat, the person sent, we get them on Sunday.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. Even better. Yes, Chaim is very conscientious about doing this right.
I think he meant he's writing the next Sunday.
Oh, no. I know. I know I got number 4. From last week, I got it, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. But you can check. We'll try to make sure you get it earlier, if that's the case. But the sooner you begin to use centering, the more you're going to integrate it into your daily life. And experience that wondrous sense of freedom. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. And no one knows, by the way. No one will ever pick up what you're doing. Bochor asked whether he should offer himself as an address for people to call. I believe you can. Yes, please, Bochor. I think it would work very well.
Okay, I'm going to put my number in the chat. And for those that are on the telephone, I'll say it out loud. The number is 848-245-6292. That's 848-245-6292. 848-245-6292. Now there's another question. You mentioned something about centering with the hands on the stomach.
Well, I will stand up and demonstrate it for those of you who can see. When you're walking into an environment and you want to be centered, one way you can do it, I'm just going to stand up over here. Is just by having one hand on top of the other by your abdomen. It's a very calming sensation, and it kind of gives you a sense of control and comfort and confidence, right? In a very quiet way. I use it quite often when I'm walking into an environment that is going to stimulate a lot of unwanted thoughts. But you can do it. You can even use centering when you're davening, right? And the people who use it very frequently. As a matter of fact, Chazal recommends that when you're davening Shema Esrei, your hands should be one on top of the other, next to your heart. Right? Or that's also a form of centering. It's a kind of a gentle, quiet experience. So that's what I meant by the stomach. Good, okay.
Just another point. You can email recoverylaunch@gmail.com. Recoverylaunch, as in rocket launch, recoverylaunch@gmail.com.
Okay. So if we have one last chance for any more questions or comments, they're welcome. I will tell you that those of you who will discover the beauty of centering will be something you'll be using probably the rest of your life. But it's not a crutch. Don't see it as a crutch. Any more than when we daven, we're suggested that we place our hands on top of each other next to our heart. That's not a crutch. It's a way of communicating. It's a way of deepening the experience. It's a way of filtering out the crassness of life and touching that deeper core of who we are. It's a beautiful thing. It's not a crutch. And you'll find 90% of the time after a few weeks of using centering, you won't even know when you're using it. It'll just come so naturally. And I'll tell you one more thing, which is very interesting. And I have noticed this many, many times. I discovered centering when working with individuals and I saw their hands flailing. And I understood what was going on. But I didn't know what centering was until I was able to calm them down, whatever means I used. And I noticed that when they were calmed down, their hands were together, gently touching, without me suggesting anything. And I began to understand that that expression of the hands is almost like, you know, like a blood pressure of 120/80. It's the natural, healthy way for hands to be. And then I began to understand concepts about Chazal and the Neshama, right? And put two and two together. And so centering has been something I've been teaching for quite some time, and it's, and I think for probably 95%, there are some people who have a hard time using it. But very, very few. I can only have a handful throughout the years. And it's kind of personality types, but 99% of those who I've taught it to have found it very helpful in different situations. So I wish you a great success in utilizing your centering and discovering the beauty of this freedom that emerges from your neshama that's been waiting for you to use it all of, since you were a little kid. Okay? Now, next week, I hope to begin at 7:15. I'm going to be out of town, but it will give you enough notice if I'm going to start later to let you know. So it may be 8. I'd like to try it at 7:15, but it may be 8 or 8:15, but I will give you enough notice in advance. Okay? So I wish you a wonderful week. Lots of hatzlacha in all your endeavors. Use centering and everything else. Go over the recordings. You're getting the tools you need to learn to be a free and loving person. Wish you all hatzlacha, Rabbah.